Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. The What to Read Next podcast helps you build a TBR of future favorite books. In each episode, Lori Amin interviews authors and book influencers to recommend books they loved for you to pick up today. If you're an avid reader, always looking for your next great read, then this show's for you. Hi, Thea. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
So happy to have you here. We've been chatting up with Storm before getting started, and I'm just so excited to chat with you now on record. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So hi, guys. My name is Thea Guanzon. I'm from the Philippines. I am a fantasy author. My debut novel, The Hurricane Wars, is coming out on October 3rd under HarperCollins. I have two turtles and a cat and a lot of houseplants. And yeah, that's basically it. That's my short little bio.
I love this. I love you have this beautiful household of plants and turtles and cat. And is your cat little Mr. Grumpy, or is it like lovable, cuddly?
I think my Twitter followers can attest to the fact that he is the meanest cat alive.
Yeah.
He has RBF. So every time I look at him, he's always glaring at me. And I'm like, what did I do wrong now?
Oh my gosh, I love this. All right. So what led you to start writing fantasy romance? Because that's like a huge, it's a big niche. There's world building, there's plot, there's characters, there's a whole different ball game that you have to create in order. Mm. And then there's romance. You have to also have a happily ever after or some sort of love story to work with. So were you a fantasy reader who wanted to go for the love story, or were you a romance and you're like, oh, we need a little bit of Game of Thrones, a little fantasy going on here?
I would classify myself as more in the former category. I am definitely a fantasy reader first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And even before I wrote this book, I already knew that if I ever wrote a book, it would be a fantasy novel. Like, it would be set in a fantasy world. However, I have also noticed about myself that even in most forms of media, I always need some sort of love story. Mm-hmm. To keep me invested and to really fall in love with that piece of media. I just need two characters getting it on and falling in love, that whole shebang. I would say that for me, I think that I would classify myself as a speculative fiction writer, mm-hmm. but I need to write a heavy emphasis on romance as well.
I love this. And so favorite part of writing this world, like, was it making the rules, making the characters fall in love or hate each other or go through the process of the journey that they need to go through in order for them to accomplish the end result?
It's actually so funny because when I started writing the draft, and then afterwards, I sent it to my editor and she was like, oh, this needs more world building. This needs more build up. And I was like, I don't know. I just wanted to concentrate on the love story. So I think the dynamic, plotting out the character dynamic was my chief concern at the start. But then as more and more of the story took shape, that was when I realized that in order for the love story to be realistic, in order for it to touch people's hearts, it needed to be set in a fully realized world, mm-hmm. that readers could also feel invested in. So I think, like, at this point, I doubt that I could have gone for one over the other.
It is all good. So talk to us about the Hurricane Wars. What is the allure pitch and why should we readers pick it up?
Yeah. Okay. The Hurricane Wars is set in a Southeast Asian inspired world that's ravaged by magical storms, which are used as a weapon of mass destruction. And The main plot basically centers on two bitter enemies who are on opposite sides of a deadly conflict and how they have to join hands to stop a greater threat that's rising on the horizon. But the question becomes, will they be able to save their world or will they destroy each other first?
Gosh, and I can imagine between the storms, between the explosion of the end, like competing factors, and then that sense of hate and love, it's explosive. So I imagine this is like a high pace, explosive opportunity for you to just dive into it and just get the most out of the story.
Yeah, I made use of a lot of storm puns. Like, I couldn't help myself.
Yeah. Someone
She
who,
was like lightning in her veins, stuff like
yeah.
that.
Oh my gosh. I think honestly, like it comes out in September, which is like hurricane season in the US. So it's like the perfect timing
I heard, yeah.
to be like, it's just in the time.
I saw one review that was like, is this set in she said the reviewer said the Hurricane Wars. Not sure if this is a fantasy novel or if it's just set in Florida. And I laughed so hard.
I am in Florida, and I can tell you, we already went through a storm. We already had, I think it was Idalia a couple weeks ago, and I had to take off from work because I didn't have Wi-Fi. I was like, I guess I just don't have to. But yeah, pretty much is. I think this is like, I think the seasons have been going on every year. It's getting worse and worse, and obviously, it's as you can say, it's a weapon of mass destruction. It creates so much damage, each of these storms.
Commiserate because just last week we had three storms come through in succession, like one after the other. It was so bad because the Philippines is located in a geographical region of the world where it's just like a magnet for typhoons. That's what we call hurricanes here. They're typhoons. All I was thinking, like when I was coming up with the title for the book, I was thinking maybe the Typhoon Wars doesn't quite have the same ring to
Yeah, I was like,
it.
I like the word typhoon. It feels so not so chill. It's like a typhoon. There's a water park named Typhoon Park, and I was like, oh, it's just like a water park. But I had my first hurricane in 1989. I remember because it was the first big hurricane that happened to Puerto Rico, and I was like 8 years old. We lost power. It barely grazes us, but it did mass destruction for the island. It was the first major one. And then every year we've had hurricanes and major ones. The biggest one is Maria that completely destroyed the power grid. But it levels of like a new level of preparation that you have to go through when these storms that happen. Like it's rain, it's wind, it's, you don't know, flooding or something crazy can happen. So
I know. When I was a kid, there was this one night, my parents woke me up and they were like, we have to go. I was like, what? Why? And then I got out of bed and I got out of bed and my feet just plunged into water because our house had flooded. That was such a visceral memory for me because I think it was around waist deep. Like, I don't know how it got so bad. Like,
Oh my gosh.
it was around waist deep. And at the time, we had two little dogs. So the two little dogs were just paddling around in the flood water. And I
Oh my gosh.
like, no, my babies. I think, that's a fact of life that Puerto Rico and the Philippines have to deal with because of where we are located. Yeah, so I think it's the same for both of our countries. It's always an ongoing conversation on how best to mitigate the effects of disaster. Hopefully things will improve.
Yeah, but I love that you took over disaster as like that can be grounded in real, like in real life, and then take it to this fantasy world. So I'm excited for when you come next because I'm like, oh, take whatever, that's happening in real world. Let's just put in a fantasy and let's just have some romance around it. So what kind of books, you mentioned you were a fantasy reader. What kind of books do you tend to read now?
Even up to this day, I still gravitate toward fantasy mostly, although I do also enjoy the occasional period romance.
Ooh, what kind of period do you like? Do you like the best?
Really, for me, I'm very flexible when it comes to settings. Yeah. As long as the writing is good. I think I actually learned, I got so much of my education about America and Europe from reading romance stuff.
Yeah, I feel you. I feel you completely, especially like English literature. Like,
yes.
Yeah, the Victorian
Regency period. Yeah.
I did not know when the Regency period was like 10 years. I was like, I thought it was like forever. It is like a little period. And I was like, I did not know any of this stuff. So I got some American education, but I got mainly Spanish education, like things about right. Spanish colonialism. So I learned, just like you, I'm like, I learned like England stuff, like by reading historical romance. I'm like, I did not know that existed.
I think that growing up, we spoke English in the house growing up. Mm-hmm. My parents raised me multilingual, but I really think that it was romance novels that really helped me get a better grasp on English. And so for a while there, my speech pattern was very, I don't know, it was very romance novel-ish. It was very Regency era-ish. And then my dad was like, why are you talking like that?
You're like, that's what I'm learning.
And I said, I read it in mom's book.
I love this.
It's the kind of books where we're like the woman, the vagina is referred to as the flower. It's being conquered by the steel rod. Oh, God.
I read those books, yeah. Do you have any books to recommend our listeners to pick up after reading The Hurricane Wars?
Yeah, so I was asked to prepare a top five.
Yep.
And I have them right here. Okay, so first of all, let's go with Night Watch by Terry Pratchett. So this is actually part of a series. It's called the Discworld series. It is my favorite fantasy series, probably my favorite fantasy series. I think it could be classified as like a parody fantasy because it lampshades a lot of beloved tropes in the fantasy genre. There's definitely like a more comic approach, but the latter books of Discworld have been infused with more social commentary. Mm-hmm. I guess as Terry Pratchett, God rest his soul, I guess as Terry Pratchett grew older, he got angrier about the state of the world. I love that he used his platform to fight for more social justice, more equality, and ever. So Night Watch it's a very strange plot. Like, this man travels back in time. He's cast back into time because of like a magical accident. And he meets his younger self and he is arrested by his younger self. Yeah, it's so funny. But like, I think that's what makes this book great, because despite this very weird plot, I cried so much while reading it, because the main theme is, it's about like people, ordinary people staging a revolution against a tyrant. So the main character is cast back into that time in his boyhood when the people of the city were building barricades and trying to start their own republic. And of course, that really called to me as a Filipino whose people has also experienced that same history of struggle for so many centuries. And I think that this is a hallmark of the very best fantasy novels, how they can have the strangest plots and be set in the most outlandish worlds, but they also capture what it is that makes us human.
Mm-hmm. Gosh, I am so excited. I need to give this a try. I've heard Terry Pratchett has been mentioned a few times in this podcast from various people, like from Darius books, so like genres, and I'm like, maybe I just need to give this a try. Now that you're selling me the book, I'm like, maybe I should just bump this up. So
yes, definitely. Actually, if you want, I could. So I read all the Discworld books. Mm-hmm. So if you want, we could do a little something about how these are the top five or top 10 Discworld books that people should read. Like somewhere down the line, we can do that, because I think there are like four. There are a whole lot of them. There are like, I think, around 40, 50.
This is exciting.
And speaking of Terry Pratchett, that's a good segue into Neil Gaiman, who is, yeah, one of his writing partners and someone that he's really good friends with, and also another author that I adore. The second book that I would recommend to readers is American Gods by Neil Gaiman. This is a book that I have read at least once a year since I was in high school. Oh, and yeah, and then it's a book that, well, every time I reread it, I discover something new about it. And I think that's so special how Neil was able to do that. It's I'm not sure how to describe the plot, but it's basically like a kind of road trip through America. And along the way, the main character encounters gods, like the gods from mythology, who have been brought over to America by all the various immigrant people that have come to America's shores. And it's really cool. I think it was my first experience with that kind of fantasy, that kind of blending together of the modern world and the ancient world. And yeah, it was very life-changing. It's such a formative book for me. And it's also like one of these little facts about the U.S., like these little bits of Americana. And every time I bring something like that up, Americans would always be like, wait, where did you learn that? That's so strange. Like, that's such a little known fact that people outside of the U.S. would normally know. And I'm like, I learned it from a novel written by a British man.
Who observe all the Americanisms and just decide to include them.
I think American Gods, yeah, it's a TV show now, but I haven't really watched after season one, but I hope to get back into it.
There we go. We have plenty of time to watch TV shows.
Okay, so the third book that I want to recommend is The Bonesetter's Daughter by Amy Tan.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a gorgeously written novel. It makes use of two narratives. Basically, there's the narrative of an American-born woman who is the daughter of a Chinese immigrant. And her narrative is basically her trying to make sense of her relationship with her mother. I think that this is something that my friends who migrated to the U.S. have also vented to me about, how sometimes it's so hard to understand sometimes it's so hard to connect to their parents, because there's even a little bit of a language barrier, because they're picked on at school for being different, for being like foreign. And so they try to assimilate into the U.S. as much as possible. They try to be as American as possible. And that alienates them from the rest of their household. It's things like that. I think it must be very hard to grow up in the diaspora. And Amy Tan tackles that here with a lot of sensitivity and poignancy and grace. And then the second narrative is, it's about the woman's mother's life in China before she migrated to the U.S. And it's it's an eerie book, because there's a lot of emphasis on Chinese curses and superstitions, which I first read this when I was really young. I really appreciated that, because we also have Chinese heritage. Mm-hmm. So it was like connecting to a part of my culture that was lost when my ancestors fled China. Yeah, there are a lot of quotes from this book that I still think about. And then there are a lot of scenes that have never left my heart. So I feel like if readers have not yet read any works by Amy Tan before, I would definitely recommend starting with The Bonesetter's Daughter.
Oh my gosh, I really, you got me with the diaspora and the need to assimilation to the U.S., but at the same time, reconnecting with your culture that's lost, reconnecting with your generation. I think sometimes we forget the books, like authors make sure those tidbits and can make an impact to that reader who is seen, who's, oh my gosh, I know this, or this may not make sense, but this identify with this or this and that. And so it's important to have those voices that are different, diverse, that just basically tells like about your culture, not in a sense of I have to educate you, but just more like those little tidbits. You're like, oh yes, yeah. I know this. I know this. I have these same superstitions. I thought it was just me, but someone else has them too.
Yes, exactly. I think that's such a special thing. The Hurricane Juarez has a lot of elements from Filipino culture. And so the advanced review copies have already been sent out. And I have gotten ARC readers in my DMs telling me like, oh my God, are they eating taho? And I'm like, yes, that's taho. I'm so happy you recognize that.
Yes.
It's basically like a street food that's very ubiquitous. Here in the Philippines.
But I think in some ways, I think it's important to infuse that because it's like it gives a sense of identification. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I've said, if I hear someone telling me, I have coquito, I have arroz con gandule, I'm like, holy crap, I know that. It's the same, it's a sense of seeing yourself in another, like seeing yourself in the culture or like opportunities for like. For me, reading about Filipino culture and seeing like the parallels that we're like completely different countries, but we were colonized by the same colonizers. And so we have certain things that even though we're opposite sides of the world, we have many similarities. but I wouldn't know this unless I was reading about this because U.S. culture will not give us, you know, they're so U.S.-centric, they wouldn't give you that education. So.
Yeah, exactly. Whenever I'm reading something like that's set in Puerto Rico, there would be these terms. I'm like, wait a minute, we have this also here, all the way here in Asia.
Yeah, we have the church all around. That's what we were talking about. We're like, we got a church every corner.
Church, the plaza.
Yeah. So I think it's important. I think it's something fun to give for yourself. It's something fun.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it can be such a gift for the reader to experience that, especially the marginalized reader who doesn't normally see themselves in books. And oh, here I am. Yeah. Somebody sees me. I matter.
Yeah. I think that's so amazing. I think there's this quote from the movie The History Boys that I really love. Mm-hmm. Basically, they're talking about how reading a book can sometimes feel as though someone has reached out across the years with a hand and that it's come to take yours. And I think that's exactly the feeling I get whenever I read a book that connects to my culture or to like to just what I'm feeling at the moment. I think I think it's so powerful what literature can do.
Yeah. Awesome. So what's the next recommendation? Now I'm excited. Okay.
My next recommendation is The House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielewski. This is a novel that it has so many layers to it and it's told in so many different formats. Like there's scripts and there's just plain text and then there's articles, there's letters, it's epistolary. And even to this day, I couldn't tell you, like I would not be able to distill the plot into a simple explanation because I think, I don't know, it's just something that you have to check out for yourself, even just to see if it will be your type of thing. Because there are some days when it's not my type of thing, like when I can hardly read it. But I think, but there are more days where, just like with American Gods, I discover something new about it that I love. I think it's a great book to read if you want to experiment with what kind of prose styles you like. And also, if you want to learn more about different ways to approach a story and how to play with language, I have a different interpretation of this book every time I read it, depending on where I'm at in my life. Yeah, I don't know. It's just really great. Although I will say that this is the House of Leaves is the kind of book that really benefits from having a physical copy in your hands because. Yeah, there's stuff that you have to turn around in order to read. It's like that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's really, honestly, I think it's a really fun book. I'm recommending it because I just think that if anyone wants to experience if anyone wants to have a different kind of reading experience, then House of Leaves is for you.
Gosh. You have me at epistolary and having multimedia kind of deal. Sometimes there's like a new, like little break of you're reading a long book or you're trying to like put some words, some prose and stuff like that. And having that multimedia, like epistolary question letters and stuff like that. It's a different experience, but it can be so immersive about allowing you to just get out of your head. You're just trying to uncover what is happening.
Okay, so you put it into better words, like why I like this book. I think you explained it better than I did, but that's exactly it.
Yeah.
So it's different formats of storytelling coming together to form one whole story that the last time I read it, it really shook me to my core. I was like, oh my god, I never realized this about myself. I never realized this about the world. Stuff like that. It's just fun. It's just a lot of fun. And it's also like striking. The pose is really great. And my next book, number 5, it's The Secret History by Donna Tartt.
Yeah.
I think that for many people, this book is probably the definitive dark academia novel.
Mm-hmm.
It was certainly my first experience with that genre. It's set in an elite college where there's a group of friends and there's a murder mystery and there's lots of emphasis on the Greco-Roman classics. And I think that this is such a well-written tale. It has a compelling cast. It has a lot of kind of dark, twisty, nuanced themes. And Donna Tartt's writing is just so lush and lyrical. There are so many quotes that I still think about. For example, there's, "Whatever we call beautiful, we quiver before it."
Love that quote.
Yes, I still think about it a lot. Yeah, those are my 5 books.
That's amazing. So thank you for giving us a journey. You gave us a little bit of everything. You gave us like some Amy Tan. You gave us some epistolary and multimedia. You gave us Donna Tartt. You gave us Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. So I think it's like a pretty overarching, pretty cool recommendation.
Yeah, I tried to branch out.
So you got stuff to do after you read The Hurricane Wars, which is even better. Awesome. So yeah, tell us where you can find you online.
Sorry. Oh, yeah. Okay, so I am Thea G. Writes on most socials like Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Blue Sky, and on Tumblr, I am theaguanzon.tumblr.com, and my website URL is also theaguanzon.com. That's where you'll find like all the links and all the information about me and my books.
Awesome. Thank you, Thea, for being the show.
Thank you so much. I had such a blast. Always happy to discuss books.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For a list of books mentioned and other book recommendations, please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com. Thank you so much for listening and happy reading.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships. to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.